Ice cold beer!
Popcorn, peanuts, Cracker Jack.
I know what the big deal about Cracker Jack is. Did you ever go and buy a pack of Cracker Jack thinking you'd get a prize and find no prize in the box?
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
To the ball game, take me out to the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back, we'll root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 1, 2, 3 strikes you out at the old ball game.
All right, welcome back to the Bench Jockeys here on 101.5 UMFM. I'm Michael Ells, joined from a safe distance by my pal Brian Svensson.
Hey, hi, howdy.
And joining us on the bullpen phone, Chris Zook.
Am I the designated person for the call? If you're in
Manitoba. Oh, yeah. is it for educational or home repair purposes that you're calling?
I could bring some firearms if you want as well.
I'm not sure if I need those.
I'm just saying, it's part of the, that's an essential item. So
I would like to opt out of this.
Yeah. Well, so last week, so we of course record Thursday nights, late Thursday nights. And I mean, that gives us about as quick a turnaround time as we can before it airs on Friday morning. But unfortunately the news broke Friday morning that the gender barrier was broken in baseball's front office with the Miami Marlins announcing the hiring of Kim Ang, the first woman to hold a GM position.
This is far, far, far overdue. I mean, Kim Ang has been an absolute pro in baseball for more time than you possibly could know. I mean, she was an assistant director of baseball operations with the White Sox from 90 to 96. She was an assistant general manager for the Yankees throughout their World Series run from 98 to 2001, and an assistant general manager with the Dodgers from 2002 to 2011. Plus, she spent the time since then working in MLB's front office on its own. So, like, if you just covered
as the senior VP of baseball operations, no less.
That's correct. So, if you just covered up the name, you know, if you submitted one of those blind resume tests,
yeah,
she would have had a job as a general manager like a decade ago.
Right. So I think there's something to be said about it, because I got to be honest. It always seems sometimes we're bashing the MLB, but I'm going to do it anyways again, because I feel there was a bit too much crowing about this. Right. Is that, and don't get me wrong, it was amazing that it happened.
Yes, it's incredible.
Yes, and so yes, let's publicize it. Let's make a big deal about it. But I would agree with you, Brian, that it seems like this was a long time coming, and that the old boys network might have been in play there for quite a while.
Oh, no doubt. But I mean, you know, it's.
Better late than never.
Exactly.
This is the same thing with Jackie Robinson, right? Like, it's fantastic that the color barrier was broken. It shouldn't have happened at the point it did. It should have happened a long time previously, right? Like, the same argument can be made that, like, you know, she was a qualified candidate for GM over a decade ago.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. You know, and we heard her name mentioned constantly in talks, like, oh yeah, you know, they're bringing Kim Ang in to interview, you know, we're gonna give her an interview, we're gonna give her a fair chance, blah blah blah. And then, you know, they always go and hire, you know, some other, you know, especially recently, some other jerk from, you know, Wall Street. And it's just, it was just embarrassing for such a long time. And then, you know, now that they finally hired, they finally got somebody, they finally hired Kim, and she's an insanely qualified candidate. And I can't wait to see what she does with the Marlins.
So not only is she the first to be GM in baseball, she's the first in any major men's sport league in North America too. So
I think she might be the first Asian American to be a GM of any sport as well.
That could be correct. I mean, yeah, I mean, hey, it's, you know, the good thing is opportunity. I think that's what, you know, in sports you're always looking for, right? And so that's, and qualified, get the job. You know, I mean, I don't know how much easier it should be about that, right? I mean, obviously it isn't, but step in the right direction.
Yeah, Dan Evans, used to be with the White Sox, who hired her as an intern in 1990, quoted in the New York Times when the announcement came out about this move. They said, "I felt from 15 years ago she was the best candidate for the job, as you know, as in a GM position, a decade and a half ago."
Very, very likely. And I mean, that's a more than just like how qualified she is in terms of baseball stuff. You can see around the world that like women are just better at running things than men are. Just straight up, women are better at running things, especially like high level positions, than men are. So like it should have happened like a long time ago. And I think the Marlins, are going to do great because of this. They've already got like a pretty decent team. I can't wait to see what she does. I can't believe that I'm excited and potentially cheering for a team owned by Derek Jeter.
I was gonna say you have to give a little bit of kudos to Derek Jeter, right? Because
I mean, this probably doesn't happen without him.
Right. The ownership, you know, someone has to sign off on it, and that's Jeets, right?
Well, so. And I mean, apparently like one of the biggest reasons why she did get hired with the Marlins is because of her connection to Jeter from when she was assistant GM of the Yankees.
Yeah, no, and he certainly knew her from that period and spoke favorably about it as a result of that. So, yeah, like I mean, this is the thing that we've seen amongst all of the GM hires over time, is it's as much who you know as what you know.
Well, sure. Let's go back to what we were talking about last week about Tony La Russa, right? I mean, you go the opposite of sort of a hire from what we're just talking about to
buddies,
that one.
Pals with Ryan.
Exactly. You know, exactly.
I still can't believe they haven't fired him.
They're not going to. It's so ridiculous. I mean, if the DUI didn't get him, like why would anything? I mean, I don't know if you've looked around the landscape here. Shame is really not in the dictionary for a lot of people or institutions or organizations anymore. So it would take a lot more to knock down people now, right?
It like, sucks.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens on that one too, right? I mean, you know, the interesting thing, there's going to be a lot of good storylines and just storylines in general for opening day, as long as there is an opening day, you know, next year. that's another time.
Yeah, I mean that's fair. That's fair.
They did put out a schedule, I believe, right? So, you know, everything seems to be like a go for that. I mean, I just don't know. Am I wrong about this? Don't they have to have an agreement, or they have one more year? I thought it was the Armageddon was supposed to be this off season. Am I right?
It's next season.
It's next. So we've got a year. Okay, so we've got a year to sort of. We still also have this thing called COVID still to deal with, right?
Yep, we certainly do.
Speaking of executive changes, Theo Epstein stepped down from being a general or a, whatever president of baseball ops of the Cubs.
Yeah, was that a bit of a surprise, or was it was surprising for me a bit, but maybe was there an inkling of this prior to the announcement?
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily like this year, but Theo Epstein has gone on record like multiple times saying that he thinks in management that he feels in management that no person should ever stay more than 10 years.
Yeah,
and
so
he just finished year nine, so he was going into year 10. So I think he just decided that like. with the way like that.
Maybe
that,
the rebuild. He didn't want to go through a rebuild.
Right. Well, not necessarily. I think he doesn't mind going through a rebuild. I think it was just that like he wanted to make sure the person who was going to start the rebuild was going to be the person to see it through, which is going to be Jed Hoyer. And for Cubs fans, like you, I mean, baseball fans in general, you have to respect Theo Epstein. The guy has broken two curses. He's in the Hall of Fame if he never manages or never general manages or whatever front office is another baseball team.
Yeah, he doesn't have to do anything in baseball.
Doesn't have to do another thing, and he's in the Hall of Fame.
I think that was almost 200 years of curses if you put together the Red Sox and the Cubs combined, right?
The misery that he
relieved off those two fan bases.
Cubs were 106 and the Red Sox were what, in the 80s?
84, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so you're pretty close to
200 years combined, right?
Like exactly.
It's crazy. Yeah. I mean, alone, like, again, remember, I mean, I we always say this, you know, flags fly forever. I mean, I, you know, in my lifetime, I'd like to see the Jets win or the Vikings win, you know, stuff like that. Right. I mean, Michael, as a Twinkie fan, they have two world championships. You win a championship, whatever. It's especially those two fan bases. I mean, my goodness, that's good enough. And if he decides to go somewhere else, I mean, someone's going to be very fortunate to pick him up because, I mean, on his resume, again, we were just talking about that, but, you know, you, just a blank resume and you've got those two championships. I mean,
yeah. Does he know anything about football? Could we get him for the Vikings?
I think he's mentioned before that he wants to go in from an ownership side. So, you know, I honestly wouldn't be surprised to see him go in with Billy Beane to go buy a piece of a baseball
team.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That would be an interesting combo. Sure. Why not? Right. There's been stranger bedfellows, you know, who own franchises.
I don't really think that they're that strange of bedfellows, right? That like Theo followed in Billy's footsteps.
Yeah. I mean, I just like probably, I'm just saying more of the temperament a bit is maybe a little bit different from both people, but
yeah, maybe that's
fair. I mean, they're generationally a little bit different, but I think Epstein certainly learned at the feet of him in terms of, you know, applying the money ball, but just with deeper pockets because he's had two teams that had a lot more money to spend.
Well, I mean, Billy broke the wall that all these GMs and scouts data analysis came through, right? He went through with his face. He took a
Brad
lot of the
Pitt's
punishment.
Face.
Sure, he went through. He took a lot of the punishment that a lot of, you know, and sheltered a lot of these GMs from getting the kind of blowback that most of them would have. So it is. It's Theo, I think, owes a lot to. I think Theo owes a lot to Billy and I think he respects him greatly.
Someone whose Hall of Fame credentials are assured to someone who's are now in jeopardy, maybe we should talk about Robbie Cano.
Yes, that's a good segue.
Oh, that's good. Hall of Fame, huh?
I think so.
No, I would have thought.
I would have thought so.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's say this. You could talk to Rafael Palmeiro and see how that one has worked out so far.
Oh, come on. I think that Robinson Cano has a lot more black ink in his under his name than
No, but I'm talking about that they're staying. Well, Palmeiro would have been a Hall of Fame candidate, right? He has those numbers that would have been right there, and he's not going to be in as a Hall of Fame through the voting because of drugs.
Yeah, I just pulled up Matt Snyder.
I think that Palmeiro's probably how much of a jerk he was probably will play into that as well.
Well, Cano isn't the saint either. I mean, Cano is.
I think he's pretty much more well liked than Palmeiro
okay,
ever
but
was.
I mean. Okay, but I'm just saying this is your second strike now, Cano. I mean, that's, yeah.
Well, this is the thing, right? And so I pulled up a few different articles about this. Matt Snyder, writing for CBS Sports, you know, said if you took Cano with no suspensions and he retired right now, he'd be a worthy Hall of Famer. 8-time All-Star second baseman with 5 silver sluggers, 2 gold gloves, All-Star game MVP and a World Series ring, career 303 hitter. With 2,624 hits, 571 doubles, 334 homers, 1,302 RBIs, and 1,257 runs. He among
probably those. the third or fourth best second baseman of all time.
That's, I was going to say, in terms of his WAR, he has a 68.9 career WAR, and the average Hall of Fame second baseman sits at 69.5. So he'd be seventh all time.
Seventh all time, which is pretty great. It's pretty fantastic.
Well, I'm just going to say straight out here, if Clemens and Bonds aren't in, Cano's not getting in. Just like until those guys get in, like I can't see it. There's no way.
I think you
I don't care. You can give me all the stats you want. Those two guys are the greatest at their position of the generation for sure. And you can make a case for all time in, you know, top five for both those. And they're, you know, to me, that's the ceiling. You need to have that broken before anyone behind them get in. Right. And to me, those two have to get in before you're looking at Cano at all. Because Cano is there without it, I guess. I mean, he would be bubble. But, you know, I mean, I don't know. To me, the PED stuff, then that's out. Like, that's for now until the voters decide they're going to look the other way about that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess an interesting test case, I guess, will be A-Rod, right?
To me, he should. Yeah, I mean, because I'll tell you this. To me, A-Rod is doing the I'm wiping the slate clean by being on TV and being the nice guy now and stuff, and everyone forgets what he like. To me, I would.
Oh, he's totally in agree full with you, Brian. Resuscitation like, mode. Yeah.
Oh, hey, I'm.
You
yeah, exactly.
All into question that entire 2009 Yankees team now, right? Considering how many of those players have been
implicated or down the line have tested at some point. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you have to, right?
I mean, I don't know. There was no garbage banging. So I'm not too sure about that. I mean, I wouldn't put it in the stratosphere of the Astros and stuff. I mean,
hang on. Teixeira implicated, Cano caught twice, Rodriguez implicated, Cabrera caught twice, Swisher implicated, Matsui implicated. And that's just the hitters. Hinsky caught once, and then on the pitcher side, Pettit caught, right? Phil Koch caught. There's been a couple other guys that have been.
I don't know. I mean,
there's been a couple other guys that have been implicated too. So like you
sure, but then
start
I
dusting
always,
enough around. You gotta at least wonder. Yeah, Duke, don't play devil's advocate on this.
I'm not going to, but I'm going to say is because I got to be honest on this stuff. To me, I didn't always look at the error of it, right? Because
2009, we were out.
Yes and no. I mean, obviously not. If there's all those players you just said, plus there was other players that, you know, on other teams, it's hard to say about that. I mean, I'm not too sure about that. I personally just would say is that, for me, Cano's out until Clemens or Bonds gets in. They get in, then you can open it up a bit. But
I think A-Rod's probably the test case because, you know, the Clemens and Bonds, yeah, but I mean, they're.
But why are they different than A-Rod? I don't.
Because of the voter base.
That. Yeah, but it's the. You're saying it's changing over, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think that the older voters care a lot more about it than the younger voters will. Like me
I
personally,
understand that, but Bonds I care, and Clements have come. They still
right,
have a couple
no,
years
Duke,
left.
I get your argument. Yeah. I get your argument. Please let me finish mine. My argument is that like because of the younger voter base, people like me, you know, people like Ben Lindbergh, people like Sam Miller, that are going to get votes. I'm obviously not going to get one, but those other two will, who have openly and outright stated, myself included, that I don't care about the steroids. They have never and will never bother me because like I don't know, it's just kind of whatever, right? For
I'm with you there, Brian.
McGuire
against
and Bonds and Clemens, Pedro, I mean those guys saved baseball, and you know I don't think necessarily that steroids help as much as people think they do. Now I'm obviously anti-Astros because I think that knowing what pitches cut helps. I think it helps more.
I think that's also different. I think correct. That's apples and oranges.
Right.
Yeah.
But so the reason why I think A-Rod is the actual real test case for whether or not Cano will get in is because A-Rod and Cano's you know, and I guess David Ortiz as well, because he was implicated. Their Hall of Fame eligibility will come later when there are more voters like me and less older voters that care more about the steroids.
Yeah.
And so I think that's why A-Rod is a better test case than Bonds and Clemens. I think A-Rod might get in while Bonds and Clemens don't, except by Veterans Committee.
To me, that's crazy, right? To me, if you can't put in the bare minimum that those two, Clemens and Bonds, were
I think they both should be in.
I'm not disputing that either. I'm just saying, if you're right, Brian, that's just such a weird dichotomy of sort of how this is going to break down is that literally on the timing, they're going to get screwed more than anything, really, right? Because you're saying if they were 5 years later in into the voting process, they would get in. Like, because they have been inching up, right? They went from kind of the 30s into the 50s. They might not make that leap to 75 before the end of the 10 years. Sure. But yeah, it's just to me, it's just like...
If A-Rod gets in, they get in via the Veterans Committee. There's no way that they don't.
Yeah, fair enough. I just think it's not. Yeah. Anyways, that's we can talk about a little bit more of the Hall. I think just to Cano. I go back to the other thing is like, are you stupid? like, do you know what I mean? Like to me, it's just
getting caught twice. Yeah, is really dumb.
Really dumb. Like, I mean, you got the one because the second one you're out for the year, and then the third one you're out of the. And for all intents and purposes, you might be out of the league anyways because he's getting up there in age, right?
He's so old. He's 38.
He only has maybe a year left-ish now. And so the only thing would be...
Well, Nelly Cruz is still playing and with the DH coming.
Fair enough. Right? The only thing is then it goes back to the other one. Is anyone going to take him after the year, right? That's another question mark, right? Would anyone take a chance on a 39-year-old?
Does his contract expire?
Well, we're saying it's a year, but I mean, like, there's no guarantee there's a 162-game season next year, but he has to serve 162 games. It could stretch into 2022 at this point.
Also fair.
Yeah. That leaves a opening at second base in New York.
EJ.
And... This is the crazy thing that I'm hearing is that DJ isn't necessarily a lock to re-sign with the Yankees, and the Mets have themselves a fresh new owner with a lot of money to spend.
I have
lots of money.
I've got a hot take fresh out of the microwave for you gentlemen. Okay. I hope you're prepared for it.
Oven cooked. This is a microwave one. Okay.
This is a microwave one. Whoever doesn't get Frankie Lindor out of the Blue Jays and Mets will go and sign DJ LeMahieu.
Interesting. So you're saying that DJ's on the move regardless?
Yeah, I don't think he's staying in New York. Mm. Well, I think he might stay in New York, but I don't think he's staying
with
the Yankees.
Might not be with the Yankees.
Because...
I think that's crazy.
Well, hang on. And I agree with you. The Yankees should back the freaking Brinks truck up for him. He's the most popular since the other guy named DJ in the Bronx. He has been incredible for them. His home road splits shows that he hits way better in Yankee Stadium than he does anywhere else in Major League Baseball. I actually don't want the Blue Jays to sign him because of how bad his home road splits are. But at the same time, he has said numerous times, and his agent said numerous times, he is only signing with the team that is willing to sign him for 5 years. And the Yankees, Cashman have said, we are only signing him if he wants to play for we're only signing him to a 3-year contract.
Ken Davidoff in the New York Post writing that re-signing with the Yankees is LeMahieu's preference, but staying in the area is okay by him, which apparently puts the Blue Jays in consideration, which I guess because they're playing in Buffalo.
Yeah, New York State, sure.
Yeah, I don't want him on the Jays.
I know what you're saying, because also the other alternative is way better. As Lindor is, it would be your number one pick.
So I actually think there are two alternatives to him. That obviously would require more giving up of prospects than LeMahieu, who is just like money, like monetary concessions. But I would obviously much rather Frankie Lindor. And the other option, which has been bantied about a lot, especially with the changeover guard in Chicago, linking it back to our earlier point, is Chris Bryant.
Mm.
And either of those two guys, I think I would much rather than DJ. DJ has been good, but like if you take a look at his home road splits, like he he is like a next level, over the top, insanely good hitter in Yankee Stadium. His OPS in 2019 was 977, and his OPS this past year was 1319. And his OPS on the road in both of those years was 818 and 713. So he's just a much better hitter in Yankee Stadium. So, I mean, if you're going to throw 5 years and probably close to $150 million, you're going to want that guy to be, you know, good everywhere.
But, you know, I don't understand the Yankees' position on that because, yeah.
Throw the bridge truck at him.
Right, you're going to hold the line here, but you're going to give Stanton, you kept that, like, you know, obviously he kept the player option. But that contract is horrible,
oh,
right?
It's so bad.
Horrible contract. And so instead of, like, oh, now we're going to draw the line here. No, but the guy.
This is the line, and you're not the team to draw the line.
Yeah, it's just weird, too. Like, all of a sudden, the Yankees are going to be fiscally responsible. Like, why start now, right? I mean, like, you know what I mean?
Sense.
Like,
zero sense.
I mean, hey, it would be good for, it's actually good for major leagues if he doesn't stay and either the Mets or the Jays or someone else gets him, and that would be great. But it's, I mean, at the end of the day, I always feel the Yankees somewhere is going to back up a truck.
Well, you know, and the Mets suddenly have an extra $24 million to spend because Cano doesn't earn a single
penny. Well, and Steve Cohen's going to spend a stupid amount of money anyway.
Well, I mean, the expectation was new owner, he's gonna start, you know, opening the wallet. But even regardless of that, Cano gets nothing for the suspension, right? So that immediately gives them 24 out of the, like, last year's budget to play with, let alone whatever new money.
I know you guys aren't huge Twitter heads in the same way that I am, but have you guys been paying attention to Steve Cohen's Twitter?
I have not.
Absolutely not, no.
He is an absolute hoot. He's so entertaining. So somebody tweeted at him today, at Steve Cohen, thanks for buying the team. I know it's not a good cash flow move, but to change the mojo, can we just pay Bobby B the $18 million we owe him right now? Maybe he takes a discount and we don't have to deal with the anniversary for the next 15 years. And Cohen responded with saying, quote, let's take a vote. How about we have a Bobby Bonilla Day every year, hand him an oversized check and drive him in a lap in the bullpen cart around the diamond. Could be fun.
Well, I mean, he doesn't care. Bobby B doesn't care. He just wants the money. He'll just take the money.
Checks, yeah.
But okay. I mean, he's been outspoken. He's been very funny. He's been very engaging. I know he's a slime ball. I know he's a slime ball with how he obtained his money. But like an owner that comes in is willing to engage with fans and is willing to spend money is everything that the MLB needs. And I guarantee you that they will not, the other owners won't like this.
And do you think that's actually him on the Twitter? Because sometimes there's staff that, you know, does whatever, right? You know,
it's too, his grammar is too consistent and like, it's just too odd.
Okay. Yeah. No, I was curious.
It's just too, like, it's not corporate stuff. You know, it's very much seems like it's somebody like legitimately just like engaging and having fun.
That's cool. That's cool. Well, we're always about for personalities in MLB, right? Be it on the field or off. So, I mean, the more the merrier, as long as it helps the game, right?
Well, I mean, exactly. And he completely just tore apart that front office. He fired Brody Van Wagenen after just over a year on the job. Oh, man.
Well, that was a bit of a fiasco last year, right?
So, question. And you guys, feel free to answer. You don't have to. Who wins a World Series first, the Yankees or the Mets?
Well, I mean, I guess the proof will be in the pudding this offseason as to what Steve Cohen does, right? Like, he can talk or tweet, but, like, let's see what kind of moves they make and if they're actually serious about, you know, turning things around under his stewardship. For as much as I hate the Yankees, Cashman is a good GM.
Yes.
And if they do pay LeMahieu, like, you know, they certainly, I was pleased that they got routed in the LDS, but like they were there. And that was with some injuries and some weird things happening. Like they're unfortunately usually in it. Whereas the Mets can go from like,
I think go from outhouse to the penthouse and back again.
Yeah.
I mean, people forget, like 5 years ago, they were in the World Series.
They were one Matt Harvey meltdown in the ninth inning away from probably winning that series.
Well, at least pushing it to seven, and then, you know, yeah, all bets are off, right? So, I mean,
They went to seven, they were going to win. I mean, they had Syndergaard or DeGrom, whoever they wanted, coming to pitch game seven. They were going to win.
The beauty is we'll never know. As Mike always says, flags will fly forever in Kansas City. So it's all good.
This is true. Well, with that, unfortunately, looking at the time, we're going to have to wrap it up for this week. Then we'll talk some more trade rumors and off-season signings.
Get the hot stove going a bit there, right?
Yeah, I mean,
the microwave,
whichever cooking device you want to use.
It's been pretty slow so far.
Yeah,
there's been a lot of rumors and not a lot of signings.
Yeah, the Giants signed a Padres minor leaguer. That was the biggest news I could find. A 27-year-old. So.
A lot of rumors.
We'll leave that for another day.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be back here next week on At the Bench Jockeys, and stick around for the pity party at 1 p.m.
Yeah.
The pity party.
Strike three, you're out.